Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Paranexus Universe. This is Doug Kelly here with Grant Rubendotz.
Hey, everybody. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome to the program tonight. We are taking your calls and your chat room questions if you are so inclined. I will put the chat or the call-in number in the chat room. It's also there on the top of your page, 347-945-7799, if you have any questions for our guest tonight, or you can type them in the chat room. Tonight we have Richard Phillips with us. Let me just give you a little info about Richard. He spent over 30 years developing aerospace software for the U.S. government. During this time, he was exposed to many classified projects for developing aircraft and flight system technologies. He draws on this experience in his first book in the Roe Agenda series, which I know he'll talk about. Born and raised in Roswell, New Mexico, a place that has become the heart for alien conspiracies, Phillips grew up with a conviction that we are not alone in this universe. Eager to learn more about the government, Phillips attended the United States Military Academy at West Point, where he earned a Bachelor of Science in Engineering in 1979. As an Army Ranger, he then went on to serve with the 1st Infantry Division in Europe before earning a Master of Science in Nuclear Physics at the Naval Postgraduate School in 1989. Richard, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. Interesting credentials, yeah. So let's get this thing. I mean, I thought it was interesting, first of all, that you were born and raised in Roswell. I mean, how cool is that?
Well, it's probably not quite as cool as it sounds, but I did have a lot of interest coming out of that area. As a child, I naturally acquired an interest in the whole Roswell situation, and I got to meet some of those people. And they turned out to be just normal folks for the most part that had a belief in what they saw, and they had some doubt about what the government was telling them. So it was an interesting place to grow up, and it got me interested in science and technology at an early age.
That's cool. So you've got your degree in nuclear physics, which is cool, and obviously you've written... Please forgive me, have you written one or two books in the Roe Agenda series?
Well, I finished two books in the series. By the way, I wanted to take a time out and say thank you to my readers who have put the first book, which is called The Second Ship, in the top 10 bestseller list for the Amazon Kindle under techno-thriller category.
Cool.
And it's actually in the top 10 on several sci-fi categories as well. So,
bravo.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, congratulations.
And now the second book, the first book, which is called The Second Ship, is actually available in paperback, just published. In fact, I was at a Book Expo in New York just last month, signing copies and doing interviews and that type of thing. So that was the big launch of The Second Ship in paperback. And I've just released the second book, which is called Immune, on the Amazon Kindle, the electronic version. So people that have iPhones or Amazon Kindles can purchase it cheaper electronically.
Cool. So when did you start writing your series?
Well, I actually started writing the second ship about 3 years ago. It was I was sitting on the beach in Maui when I started writing it, and that's a great place, great place to start writing a book. But I had wanted to write a series of novels set at the National Laboratory since I'd done quite a bit of work there, and the location for the second ship is actually centered around the Los Alamos National Laboratory, which of course was that's this beautiful place in northern New Mexico, sits up about 8,000 feet right between Taos and Santa Fe, and that is of course where the Manhattan Project that created the atomic bomb kicked off back in the 40s.
So obviously your novels are just that, but let's get into maybe what brought this all about, or some of the behind the stuff, the basis and all that. In your bio, you talked about you came to the conclusion that we're not alone. What brings you to that conclusion?
Well, I came to that conclusion actually before I went to work at any of the national laboratories, and it wasn't it wasn't based on the Roswell incident or anything like that. I think it's just egotistical, for one thing, to look at the number of stars just in our galaxy and the number of planets that are bound to be around all those stars, and to think we are the only life form out there. I personally have a hard time imagining such a thing, and I think it's probably a big stretch to say that we're the most advanced species that there is as well. So for me, it just made sense to come to the conclusion, there intelligent life has developed somewhere. We're proof of that.
Right.
So the odds are non-zero. And then when you roll the dice as many times as there are habitable planets in the universe, I mean, that number is bound to come up a number of times.
Yep, I agree with you completely. I mean, it just goes back to that aspect of human arrogance to think that we're the only ones. We've talked about that a lot on the show. You know, the universe has got to be teeming with life.
I wanted to write a series that took a look at the, for a long time people have been asking the question, if the government did have an alien spacecraft, why would they keep it a secret? You know, why wouldn't they release the information about it? That type of thing. But whenever you you think about the possibility that that alien life forms might have visited the Earth, then you have to ask yourself a couple of questions. Number one is, why? What was their agenda? What would bring them all that way? It's probably not to take a look at the flora and fauna of the planet. So they'd have to have a darn good reason, and that would be something, their agenda would be something that the U.S. government would be very, very interested in if we did have, and I'm not saying we do or we don't, but if we did have one, the government would be very interested in what was the agenda that brought them here. And the other thing is, why would they crash once they got here? I mean, it's not likely we shot them down.
Right.
So within the context of the second ship, right near the beginning of the book, the president announces that the U.S. government has had a damaged alien craft that we've been investigating the technologies of for a number of decades, but that recent breakthroughs in the technologies or the study of those technologies are so important that he can't justify keeping it secret anymore. So, in fact, the government is going to start rolling out the beneficial technologies one by one over the coming months.
And this is according to the book, though, right?
Yeah, this is according to the novel.
Okay.
So I'm taking a look at the scenario that the government does have a secret program, and the study of the technology accomplishes such breakthroughs that it becomes imperative that he, or at least the president feels it's imperative that he open those technologies up to the public.
Okay.
Start to roll them out, and there's a small group of people trying to stop this rollout, and they find themselves just trying to stay alive because the powers that be are going to make darn sure that nothing slows down what I call the rogue program.
Okay, so let's do this if we can. Rather than speak from the book's perspective and give away the plot too much, for you know, you don't want to spoil it, let's speak from what you think to the extent that you can. And I appreciate that there's some things you just can't get into for classified reasons, so that's fine. But let's go into that if we can. What
sure,
in fact, there's a good question. There's a good question in the chat room. What is our agenda in trying to find other life forms? And I'm assuming by our meaning, you know, the government or our country.
Well, we're operating. Well, I assume they're talking about SETI or the search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Not necessarily SETI alone.
But in general, there's a couple of different things. You know, there's the generic agenda. Let's say the Carl Sagan agenda of answering the question: are we alone? I don't believe that's enough of a reason, in and of itself, to drive us to continue to look. There would have to be deeper reasons than that, and you know, when you think about the universe and this whole concept of habitable planets, even though there would be bound to be a lot of them, those are an incredibly rare thing. Even if there's lots of them, there's so much space separating them that they're incredibly rare and valuable things.
What is
so,
specifically?
I'm sorry.
If there's other planets.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm saying habitable planets, planets that life
in the Goldilocks range
life can develop on and can live on. So if you assume that there are species that are more advanced than we are and that have the capability of interstellar travel, then an obvious part of their agenda would be to find other habitable planets, because, like I said, they're rare and valuable things, and at least our species and probably other species have this habit of messing up your own planet.
Yeah.
So the ability to expand and to explore and to colonize would probably be a key driving factor. Now, for us, we're not at that stage. I mean, we don't have the technology, but I guarantee you if we did, you just have to think back upon, you know, the days of Columbus and before, when you could have companies that were going out sponsored by governments laying claim to lands and resources and stuff. That's what drives exploration.
Merchants.
So we have to think about that from a government perspective, as we don't have the technology for that, but it's possible that other species do.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be aware of their agenda, in a careful fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've certainly been noisy enough so that if anybody's out there and they listen to such things that are as primitive as radio waves, they've got to know we're here.
Well, yeah, at least within a certain range.
Right.
You know, those waves, you know, you think about it like the old movie Contact, where they did that thing where they zoomed out from Earth and started receiving signals farther and farther back in time, so that when you're, you know, 50 light years out, you're just hearing the old baseball games from 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing. The radio signals that we've produced only are in a bubble going out that is relatively small from the size of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of folks, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, really don't understand that we're kind of on the fringe of our galaxy too.
Yeah, and, we're in a spiral arm.
Yeah,
we're just kind of in a lonely spiral arm,
mm-hmm.
And there's lots of other stuff going on out there. So it just depends on how good people can get around, or beings can get around, that influences the distances they can travel.
So from the standpoint of a physicist, what do you think the possibility is of interstellar travel?
Well, you know, one of the things that drives me crazy is, and it happens in every generation, you know, whether it's Galileo's or back when Archimedes was around, every generation, their top-level scientists assume they know it all. they're close to knowing it all, okay?
Don't they? Are you saying they don't? Oh, my God.
Well, and it's understandable. I mean, if these guys are smart guys, but they tend to put their whole life's work into becoming an expert on a particular subject, and that's usually the standard physics model of the time. It might be a fancy one, quantum physics or astrophysics or the unified model, whatever it is. They become an expert on that, and they've bought into that model. But it is a model. You know, it's the best model we've got, but it's only a model. And when you start thinking the map is the same as the territory, you got a problem, because maps miss a lot of things and they make a lot of assumptions. So our models are bound to be wrong, and some of our assumptions, including the limitation on nothing going faster than the speed of light. Mm-hmm. I know that's been around solid as can be for roughly a century, but that's a blink of the eye in the development of history. So I don't put a lot of faith in the fact that that's the end all and be all.
No, that's honestly, you can't go faster than the speed of light is equivalent of Middle Ages thinking.
Certainly can't do it in this universe, but who's to say that, you know?
There's lots of things that were deemed impossible 200 years ago that we're doing all the time right now.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to use the example of spontaneous generation. Scientists believed at one time that all the worms and snakes just kind of grew out of the mud on the side of the riverbanks. And that was the standard orthodoxy at the time, and everybody believed it. Because the scientist told you so. The scientist told you so. It had to be true.
Well, I think it's everyone's job, whether it's science or politics or whatever, to question. You know, I'm a big believer that you have to question. You can't just assume what people are telling you is the straight-out truth. They might think it's the truth, but if you don't question for yourself and think for yourself, you're going to be left with whatever they give you. So.
Yeah, and most folks will subscribe to it. They'll go along with it, because if they don't question, you know, you might as well be going
the way out.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things in the...
It's scary when you question sometimes.
You know, one of the things in my series, The Real Agenda, which is, by the way, spelled RHO, and I'll just step back with a little bit of self-promotion and say people can go on my website at secondship.com. That's spelled out second, S-E-C-O-N-D, ship.com. And there's excerpts and bios and news and that type of thing. But one of the things in the Roe agenda was this discussion about questioning the basic assumptions that physics operates under. And, you know, there's programs out there right now some of which are classified and some of which are not, that are working at the ragged edge of our understanding of physics. And one big one is the Large Hadron Collider that's just outside of Lake Geneva, that's the largest super collider in the world, and, of course, CERN, which is the European Nuclear Agency, is the big sponsor of that. But many countries, the U.S. included, have participated in building that 17-mile tunnel just that crosses between the border of France and Switzerland. So that thing was fired up a year ago, and it reminded me a lot, although it broke down right away, but it reminded me a lot of, I don't know if you recall back in, the stories of back in the 40s as they were getting ready to test the atomic bomb out at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. There were some of the scientists on the program that were worried the temperatures in the explosion might be hot enough to actually set the Earth's atmosphere on fire.
Yeah,
and burn off the Earth's atmosphere. Now, they took a look at it, and they debated it, and they decided, well, you know, it's a pretty small possibility, so let's drive on. Well, there's scientists today and that have looked at the possibility that the Large Hadron Collider outside of CERN, when that thing comes fully operational, could produce energies that are large enough to produce a microscopic black hole. Now, to be fair, the scientists on the other side say, well, the odds of that are very small, and it would probably last for only a tiny, tiny fraction of a second if it did happen. So the danger's nil, negligible. But others have raised the prospect if that happened, it could attain a degree of stability. And of course, if a microscopic black hole stabilized, then it's gradually going to eat everything around it until you know, the entire Earth would be consumed. So there are projects that are being worked on, and not just in those realms. Some of them are very classified projects that have tremendous rewards associated with them, but also represent some fairly significant dangers.
Why, after all these years, are all these projects still black?
Well, you know, there's a number of potential reasons. Number one, the people in control of the programs, you know, there's always oversight by somebody that's an elected official or some small group of elected officials. So some politicians are deciding that that it is in the best interests of the public not to release the information. Maybe it's you know, the types of reasons are, of course, it gives us some type of military advantage to continue to study these things without other people being able to. Or you know, the other possibility, and this is one I discuss in the second ship, is they decide to release technologies, and these technologies, although they have great benefit, have some nasty unintended consequences. So, I mean, there's a number of possible reasons. One being that the government just tends to maintain secrecy for no good reason, you know, a lot of times.
Well, here's a question from chat. Do you feel that there are actual alien beings working in some of these projects?
Well, I wouldn't say I wouldn't say definitively because, but I certainly haven't. I certainly haven't worked with any that I knew of, let's put it that way. I mean, I've worked with some people I suspected for ulterior reasons.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I've met a few of them, too.
We see them all the time, too. That's right.
But I, you know, I honestly couldn't say for sure that that's not the case. It's just not something that I would be aware of.
Well, everything is so compartmentalized. I think it would be really difficult.
Let's get hypothetical for a second here. Let's say that there. Let's just admit that there's a program that is working on understanding some alien artifact. Let's call it that. The way the government tends to work on these highly classified programs is just what you mentioned. You can have all kinds of clearances, but they also compartmentalize the information so that no single person, or there might be a single person, but there's not very many people that know everything about the whole program. They're working on their particular little piece of it, and they're handing that piece off to another team that's working on another piece, and eventually, hopefully, the information gets put together. And this is really one of my pet peeves, is a lot of times compartmentalizing information produces exactly the opposite effect. You know, they do it because then if somebody turns, secret
rogue.
Agent, rogue agent,
there's only so
they
much
don't know,
damage you can
they
do.
Don't know
yeah.
too much. But the effect it really has is to slow our own research down a lot. It's like I relate it back to the old Get Smart cone of silence. You know, they'd lower this cone of silence for something really secret, and then they'd all be yelling in there and couldn't hear each other talk.
Yeah.
And finally, they'd have to raise it, raise this thing up because we can't get anything done.
I'd forgotten all about that.
That's what this compartmentalizing of information does a lot of times, because one team might have the answer to something that another team is really needing bad to have a breakthrough. But they can't talk to each other, and they don't know about it. And it's right down the hall in another windowless room. And so it slows our own research down. Now, there are, we got burned in the Manhattan Project. that wasn't the best example of secrecy, since the Russians got the goods on that pretty early on.
Yeah, I always wondered about that.
So there's reasons. We've been burned before, so there's reasons why people put these procedures in place. But a lot of times I think they use them too much, they use them for too long, and it just slows our own development down.
Well, what about our development? Do you think that, like Philip Corso would have us believe, that some of the technologies are a result of alien technology, whether captured at Roswell or elsewhere, or given to us directly?
Well, I won't comment on that directly, but I will say, thinking people have raised this issue for a long time, not just about recent events. They look back at all of these great technological wonders of the world that happened ages ago, from the Great Pyramids to some of these architectural patterns that form this fantastic pattern that you can see from an aircraft. But people ask themselves, now, how did people of that time put together something that had a perspective that you would only think about seeing from an aircraft?
Mm-hmm.
There's been this line of questions for a long time, and thinking people have really a lot of them have concluded it's just not likely that some of these things happened without some outside help.
Well, that would make sense. So one of our listeners in the chat room asked, have you ever been inside Area 51?
I'm not going to really talk about that particular that particular thing, but what I will say, one of the reasons, in addition to the fact that my Real Agenda series is a fast-paced thriller series, but one of the things people like to do with it is, knowing my background, I put a lot of real stuff in there, but it was real stuff that was not classified.
Mm-hmm.
They like to take a look at the other stuff, the other science/science fiction items that are in the book, and try to read between the lines and see where I might be leaving something out or hinting at something.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've had a number of readers say that they felt like I may have crossed the classified line in a number of places in the second ship. I, of course, deny that totally, because I've tried to be rigorously careful to keep myself out of trouble.
Sure.
But I think that that Area 51 is an interesting topic, and within the second ship, right near the beginning, there's a section that takes place under Groom Lake, and of course Groom Lake is this dry lake bed in Area 51, and there's this tunnel down below that that lake bed where this section of the book takes place in. So that's probably about as far as I want to go on that topic.
Okay. All right, cool. So we've heard stories where the government has given orders to shoot down UFOs on site in some cases. Is that an area we can go into?
Well, it's not an area that, you know, that's not my area of expertise. You know, the orders, those orders supposedly came out to specific pilots, and really it's their stories that are the firsthand accounts of that. So I really don't have a lot to add to that.
Okay, well, here's a good question from the chat room. Do you feel that a civilian group, research group, could be successful in investigating UFOs without involving the government, such as not notifying them of crashed crafts, if they should become aware of that?
Well, certainly if they had access to a craft. I mean, there's, you know, the problem is money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's backing the research? You know, the government has these huge laboratories, and they've got big funds. And they, of course, they fund Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore, which are sister laboratories, and Sandia National Laboratories, and a bunch of others. But those two laboratories in particular are run by the University of California, and that's under contract with the U.S. government. And it's been like that for ages. So there's big bucks involved, and the things these guys can make inside those laboratories. You know, so I'm a huge fan. You know, the physicists, there's a lot of smart scientists and physicists in there. But I'm a huge fan of the guys that make the stuff work. And these are machinists and technicians. And these guys, with the right kind of machine shop and electronic shop, can make anything. So that's the tough part. When you're trying to reverse engineer something or you know, study something, it's all about the tools.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools mean money. So if they've got enough money and enough backing, and the government didn't take it away from them, I'm sure the civilian world, you know, has more smart people than the government does. In fact, most of the government's really, really top-level scientists are civilians. So they could certainly do it, but it's all about money.
Would there be any laws broken if that were to happen? Let's just say, for example, you've got a rich backer, and you've got some resources and all that, and you became aware of some kind of a craft, crashed craft. Is there any laws that would be broken by not notifying the government?
I don't believe so. I think the government has never wanted to own up to the existence of such things, so they've never wanted to make any laws that said, well, if you find an alien spacecraft, you can't invest it. You've got to turn it over to the government right away.
Right, that would be an admission.
So I don't think there would be, you know, any laws.
Of course, that wouldn't preclude them from just doing it.
No, you could do it anyway.
Taking it away from you.
Yeah, the only thing is the government can always use the equivalent of eminent domain, which is saying this is in the national security interest of the United States, and once they found out about it, they could always take it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
let me ask you a question, Richard. There's been a lot of talk for years that there's been more than one space program going on. Can you tell us anything as to whether or not that part of the folklore is real or just mythology?
Well, there certainly is. I mean, in a non-classified, well, just talking in the United States only, there are certainly military space programs going on. You know, there's, for a long time, there was the Army Space Program Office, which has now been pretty much rolled up under other organizations. But the Air Force is the key military component for space, although the Navy would argue with you about that. You know, they have their own interest in space. And, you know, there's military, lots and lots of military satellites, and there's programs, many of which are classified, that have to do with control of communications in space and control of the near-Earth space itself. So there are, certainly are multiple space programs that are admitted to in this country. And I think the similar thing and most other of the top technological countries in the world.
Yeah, and let me just kind of clarify too. I'm not talking about satellite technology. You know, I'm talking about something more sophisticated that perhaps the public isn't aware of. Something more sophisticated than the space shuttle.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't really want to get into that topic.
Okay.
But I would just say that there are more than one more than one space program, and
mm-hmm.
and some of those things you just have to speculate about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I guess we can't go on to whether the government actually set up moon bases during the 60s, early 60s.
I don't want to really go down the line of saying what the.
Sure.
Well, how about this? Do you think there's any credence in the MJ-12 documentation?
Well, I think that
we're giving him a hard time. We don't
well,
mean
I,
to
I
be.
Yeah,
I'm not
trying to give you a hard time.
I wouldn't just blow it off. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right.
Cool. So, all right, let's try this from a different direction now. Obviously, Paranexus is an association of anomalous researchers, and rather than just keep doing what we've always done so we always get what we've always got, you know, the big question is, all right, where do we go from here? And let me just preface it with a couple of comments. You know, we've collected what data we can collect up till now. I mean, we've got thousands of reports on sightings. We've got many on trace evidence. And let's just keep going. We've got some evidence to suggest that some alien abductions are ongoing or true or genuine. I personally don't believe near the number that they're talking about. Now let's factor in parapsychological phenomena and, you know, such as ghosts, spirits, and all that stuff. In my opinion, it's all the same thing, only different. Now, since we've collected all this data for decades, and we really haven't made any big breakthroughs in several decades, you know, it's from an investigative point of view, just to investigate this stuff, any ideas, what do we do next?
Well, I actually got asked that same question last night in a little different way. You know, it all boils down to what you believe the government has. Okay, if we assume for a second that the government has a lot more information than they are letting out for the public consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Then the answer to that is more hopeful because even though, well, let's say they've had one or more crafts since the 1940s at least that they've been researching. If that's the case, then at some point in time, we've got to rely on political leaders making the judgment that we can handle the news about whatever they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because our political leaders are the ones that that in the end are responsible, you know, our top level political leadership is the ones that are responsible for what we find out about that is classified and what we don't find out about, we would just have to hope that at some point in time they would believe that the release of that information was both safe and in the interest of the country, and that's the exact scenario I propose in the second ship, that an event like that comes about, which changes the whole ballgame, because then once it becomes public, then independent researchers can go in,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of things, advances can start happening. But otherwise, you're just piddling around the corners, and that's what when I talked about the earlier question about private research. The problem is you don't have the kind of access and you don't have the kind of funds that you need to really make huge gains.
Yeah.
But the government does.
Yeah.
So we would just have to hope in that scenario that that the situation changed and that the government came clean on what it had.
So that being said, you know, what are we as ufologists and anomalous researchers and to do? I mean, where are we going to go from here? Any thoughts on
that?
Well,
I think that, you know, whether it's this topic or, like I was saying earlier, political topics, I think it's the responsibility of the people of this country to question the accepted truth.
Amen.
And if you find, by questioning, we often make breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
We find things that were assumed to be true are not true, and that moves everyone farther along. The world is not flat. You know, the
mm-hmm.
sun is not the center of the universe. Things like that. And by continuing to question, that's how doors get opened. When everybody just comes to blindly accept what they're being told, the pressure stops, and I think progress stops.
All right, well, let's throw this one at you, see if you have any thoughts or can comment on it anyway. One of the hypotheses of all of this stuff, and I'm talking about ghosts, you know, spirits, hauntings, parapsychological stuff, abductions, UFO sightings, all of it. There's a lot of similarities in the phenomena. There's a lot of overlaps. And so that has led many people to hypothesize that maybe we're not dealing with the typical, yep, there's a ship and it's got these physical beings in it. I guess what I'm asking is, to what extent does interdimensional entities play in all of this stuff? Is that a feasible hypothesis?
Well, I mean, there's very now you would have a lot of disagreement on intelligent life in that context, but there's certainly prominent physics theories. Now, one of which being string theory, which proposes a number of extra dimensions to
mm-hmm.
resolve. You know, the problem is when you get into the mathematics that they have to use in our current physics models and try to make them all line up into a universal
theory,
model, right? The math doesn't work out unless you start allowing multi-dimensional computations.
Mm-hmm.
They can't solve the problems. The problems become unsolvable. And in fact, even in basic high school math, you're introduced to something that is almost along those lines, which is imaginary numbers. You know, the square root of negative numbers. That's not
mm-hmm.
a solvable thing unless you allow for what's called imaginary numbers. And when you take that into higher physics, and some of the most complicated forms of physics, to actually solve the problem, they have to move it into more than four dimensions. So, since our model has to be in more than four dimensions, sometimes the model is, certainly the model's not dead on, but sometimes the models are telling you something you should pay a little more attention to.
Right. So, it's in terms of entities that are visiting the Earth, you know, again, been a lot of conjecture that there's a whole bunch of them, and they're not all physical. Some of them are interdimensional. Have you thought of that or explored that?
Well, it wasn't actually a part of my particular research programs, let's put it that way. But I've certainly, you know, I've been a big fan of a lot of the interesting work that's been, you know, these are thinkers. People are thinking of things, and some people are proposing what they have, or interpretations of what they've seen, and some people are speaking more on a philosophical or a theoretical level.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly don't have any personal experiences in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't regard it as out of the question either.
You know, if we could just digress for a second, you know, going back to the government disclosing any of this information, I think they're extremely I don't think they're ever going to disclose any of it. And and I'm sorry if I sound pessimistic, but you know, I think they base their whole philosophy on the Brookings Institute's report, you know, and how the consequences have been so disastrous when an advanced culture, you know, kind of collides or makes contact with a less advanced culture. And I think that that's one of the biggest reasons that they're going that it would just, you know, cause a collapse. And to me, that just is, you know,
well, I mean,
news for about 2 weeks, and then everybody'd go back to the old same routine.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that thought is that, like we said, if something had happened, if we assume that something happened in the 40s, it's been a generation that they've kept that bottled up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that doesn't look good for the odds going forward of any type of near-term release of information. On the flip side of that, though, is government secrecy isn't always that great. I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And whether it's someone that feels that it's really in the interest of our Constitution that people know, be made aware, or we don't know what the catalyst would be, but in that case, we would just have to hope that something changed significantly and forced a coming clean.
Well, I can think of one catalyst, and that's if the people of Earth say, "Hey, we want to know," or the majority of people of Earth say, "We want to know." You know,
yeah, and the way they, of course, fight that would be to marginalize anybody that they consider a threat by making them out as okay, well, he's got kind of a laughable theory, or he's not really a serious person. So they try to use a lot of that in many cases, not just in this particular topic. If you can discredit someone, then you don't have to worry near as much about dealing with their, you know, with what they're talking about.
Well, you know, and the other thing that's really the flip side too of the Brookings Institute is, what if they do know something, and what if what they know is something that would freak everybody out? What if we're somebody's property, or what if we're no more than cattle, or, you know, or a petri dish? They're damn sure not going to let that news out to everybody.
Well, that's that's not the exact scenario, but it's along those lines that the Row Agenda series is is, you know, that's the driving force. The series is called the Row Agenda, and it's spelled R H O after the Greek letter, but it's about an agenda. You know, and if you assume what your question assumed was that these aliens had an agenda and they have superior technology to implement their agenda, then it would be something to be seriously concerned about.
Do you think,
especially if their motive is invasion? If their motive is invasion, and it's a slow process to sound Star Trek-ish, you know, assimilation. The battle's already won.
Well, in the scenario I looked at in the second ship is there is an alien race that's bent on expansion. Let's say expansion instead of invasion, but same thing. They have a competing race that's bent on stopping them from. Dominating the galaxy, so they have opposition, and it's this opposition. When these two craft go down, it's because they shot each other down, and those two craft, even though they're, you know, there's no life forms left alive on them, the gist of it is their agendas didn't completely die with the craft. So that kind of underrides everything in my series of novels. So So it's interesting that you would propose that particular.
Well, you know,
scenario.
The other thing is that Arthur C. Clarke had the benevolent but disengaged gardeners. You know, a lot of times,
sure.
And many of his, that, you know what, they didn't give a damn what we thought. They were on their mission. And their mission was they were either seeding or doing whatever it was. And you know what? It wasn't important what we thought. And I think that humans, you know, really have that tendency because we're so egocentric to think that we're the center of the world. And you know, when you think like that, you know, we're no different than a mound of fire ants. You know,
right.
Who wants to come and see us? Unless
well,
you're going to
one,
either conquer us or take our natural resources.
Well, and you're exactly right to ask the question. If you were in charge of things for the government, and you were aware of something bad that we currently had no means of dealing with. You'd probably
keep it secret.
Keep it bottled up. You'd probably be working like hell to try to come up with a way around that. But at the same time, you may have doubts about letting that out to the public. So there. You know, in general, I think that that it's good to disseminate information as much as possible. I think we end up shooting ourselves in the foot when we try to keep things too compartmentalized for too long.
Do you think there's any truth to the abduction phenomena?
I don't know. You know, there's been lots of reports on that. It's certainly not anything that that I have worked on particularly. But, I mean, there's lots of people that seem perfectly reliable that are convinced it happened. It's just I have no personal...
Okay.
How about,
personal knowledge.
do you have any personal knowledge of longitudinal studies being done by the government in black projects, seeing, you know, like long-term effects of chemical, biological, or nuclear materials on the environment or livestock, that sort of thing?
Well, I really can't talk about classified projects. I know, but even when you get outside of classified projects, there are certainly government studies going on. In fact, I worked on one that was unclassified. There are, well, I'll give you an example. There's a set of unclassified software that's been used for years developed by Sandia Labs called the Integrated Tiger Series. And this is a series of simulations that's run. And what it does is it models all kinds of radiation and the transport, life cycles, et cetera, of quantum particles, nuclear particles passing through a variety of materials and the effects it has on materials. And that's used not only for military purposes, but it's used you know, for things as simple as providing shielding around medical equipment that uses those type of materials.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly studies along those lines, and the only ones I can't talk about are in the classifieds.
Let me ask you this question, Richard, because this is something that fascinates me, and maybe you can kind of elucidate for me. You know, it seems to me, and I'm strictly a layman, that we're surrounded, we're kind of fish, and we swim in this ocean of energy that surrounds us. We're bombarded by sunlight. The Earth has a natural magnetic field. We have, of course, our atmosphere protects us against a lot of the stuff. But just from all these different fields of radiation, do we really know how they interact?
Well, not they're, like I said, we've got physics models, but the real answer to that is no in the whole, because you know, some of those questions are what they're trying to answer with this Large Hadron Collider, which is, by the way, is scheduled to come back online later this year. It's been, it had a problem when they first fired it up. They did actually bring it online, but they had a failure, and the public story on that is that the there was a problem with some electromagnets. They had a breach in the vacuum tube, which is the tube that where they accelerate the particles around for the high energy collisions. And then they had a loss of supercooling on some of these magnets. So, but the bottom line is they had a problem, and it was a severe problem, and that is almost fixed. They've got a couple more months of work to do on that before they fire that back up again.
All right.
But that's going to be a test where they try to generate the Higgs boson, which is the so-called God particle.
God particle. Yep.
And that particle is one predicted by the standard physics model that they have not observed. You know, they've got.
What does that mean for physics if we find it?
It means if they find that particle, it means it confirms a part of the current theory, which doesn't mean that we've got the complete right model, but it'll make a lot of people that have invested a lot of time in current physics theory feel pretty good about the direction we're going in. Okay. If they don't find it, that's actually the bigger news in my mind. You know, of course, that's probably blasphemy, but that would mean that something is seriously wrong
with our model.
Well, there's two things.
But haven't our satellites already told us that? Like those gamma radiation, they're telling us things that the universe isn't expanding or it's expanding faster.
Oh, there's all kinds of problems with the current model. You know, the real hard thing is trying to come up with a model that's complete and totally correct. But in my mind, that's the wrong way to be looking. We need to be looking for areas that allow us breakthroughs, even if it means taking assumptions that we consider absolutely sacrosanct.
Yep. Wild and woolly.
Speed of light.
We're down to a couple of minutes, so
conservation of energy, that type of thing.
All right.
All have to be questioned.
Real quick, just to kind of wrap this up, because we're down a couple of minutes. Do you have an opinion on what the alien agenda might be, if there is one?
Well, I think that you know, we can use ourselves as a pretty darn good model. I think there's competing agendas, and
okay.
Of course I'm speaking hypothetically here, but but I believe that the aliens all don't have the same agenda.
Okay.
And those competing agendas might be a good thing for us.
So that would be a good point for investigators to.
Yeah, I believe so. So. Okay.
Well, cool. So your site is secondship.com.
Right,
second,
spelled out.
Spelled out, yep. And your book is The Row Agenda.
The Row Agenda, and it's spelled R-H-O. The first book in the series is The Second Ship.
Right. Well, good. And it looks like an interesting book. So
sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
So if you guys will email me your mailing address, I'll send you each a signed copy.
Wow, that'd be great. All right, so we're coming down to the last little bit of time that we've got. Just by way of reminder, if you are not a Paranexus member, we'd love to have you as a member. Go take a look at paranexus.org. We've added website hosting to our members package, which I think is a great deal. You know, you can join Paranexus for $4.50 a month. You get website hosting, you can host up to 25 domains, it's plenty of space, save you money, and plus we have other benefits, plus catch the Paranexus vision. You know, we're an association of anomalous researchers, and we want to make some pioneering in the field here. We want to get things going, so we need your expertise, we need your creativity and your ideas. Let's work together, let's not compete. Richard Phillips, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure. Very interesting.
Yeah, the pleasure's been mine, and I would encourage your listeners to question everything.
Yes. Good
point.
Good advice. So go take a look at Richard's site, secondship.com. Buy his book, The Second Ship, in the Row Agenda series. And again, thanks so much, Richard. Thank you for everybody for listening to us and coming back. And next week we've got Paul Tate and Andrew Barnes on with sleep paralysis. There you go.
This
is in Stanton Friedman in 2 weeks. So, folks, we're out of time. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
Yeah, everybody have a great weekend.
Good night. Hang with us, Richard.
Universe.